Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation on reversing Crohn's and colitis. And today I am joined by my wonderful colleague, Dr. Terry Walls. And if you're not familiar with her work, please be prepared. You are in for a treat. Not only is Dr. Walls a pioneer in the space because of her own journey with multiple sclerosis, which I will let her share with you, but also in the way that she has brought diet and lifestyle choices to the forefront across paradigms of medicine. So she's an Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner, and she also conducts clinical research using functional medicine principles in the setting of multiple sclerosis. In 2018, she was awarded the Institute for the IFM's Linus Pauling Award for her contributions in research, clinical care, and patient advocacy. Dr. Walls has secondary progressive multiple sclerosis, which confined her to a tilt-recline wheelchair for 4 years. She restored her health using a diet and lifestyle program she designed specifically for her brain and now pedals her bike to work each day, which is just phenomenal, isn't it? She's the author of The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles in Functional Medicine, The Walls Protocol, A Radical New Way to Treat All Chronic Autoimmune Conditions Using Paleo Principles, and the cookbook, The Walls Protocol Cooking for Life, The Revolutionary Modern Paleo Plan to Treat All Chronic Autoimmune Conditions. So she is quite the expert, and we're in for a treat today. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Terry.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Why don't we start with your story? Because I think this really provides hope to anybody really working through a chronic condition.
So I have, I'm an internal medicine physician. I'm in practice doing really well. And 20 years ago, actually almost 25, a half mile from home, my left leg grows weak, you know, dragging it a hobble home. When I see the neurologist, he says, Terry, this could be bad or really, really bad. And so for the next 3 weeks, I go through lots of tests. I hear multiple sclerosis. I do my research. I find the best MS center in the country. I see their best physician. I take the newest drugs. 3 years later, I hear tilt recline wheelchair because I've been getting relentlessly worse. I take mitoxantrone, a form of chemotherapy, does not help. I take Tysabri, the newest biologic, does not help. I've switched to Cellcept. And then I ask myself a really important question. Am I doing all that I can? And that's when I go back to reading the basic science, which by the way is a real chore because I'm not a PhD, I'm not a neurologist, but I developed the theory that mitochondrial dysfunction is what drives disability. And I create a supplement cocktail for my mitochondria and the speed of my decline slows. I'm super grateful. I discover a study using electrical stimulation of muscles in people who are paralyzed, who are never gonna walk. And I meet with my physical therapist. He agrees to give me a test session. It hurts a lot, but when it's over, I feel great. So we add the electrical stimulation of muscles to my little itty bitty tiny workouts that I was doing every day. And then I discovered the Institute for Functional Medicine. They have a course on neuroprotection, talk a lot about mitochondria. I have a longer list of supplements, which I'm happy to add. And then I had this really big aha. What if I redesign the paleo diet that I've already been following for 5 years based on this long list of supplements that are important to my mitochondria? So that's more research. I figure out where they are in the food supply. And I have this newly designed, very structured paleo diet. Now, at December of 2007, I've been so weak, I cannot sit up in a regular chair. I've been in a zero gravity chair with my knees higher than my nose. That's how I staff the resident clinic. That's how I take my meals at home. I can take just a couple steps using two walking sticks. I'm beginning to have brain fog. I have trigeminal neuralgia that's getting relentlessly worse. It's very clear to me I'm on track to become bedridden by my illness, probably demented by my illness, probably dying with intractable, horrific electrical face pain. And that's when I start this new way of eating. Yeah, and by the end of January, it's clear that my mental clarity is improving, my energy is improving. My physical therapist says, "Now, Terry, you're getting stronger." He advances my exercises. I'm doing 10 minutes now twice a day. And I tell my family, I'd like to try sitting up in a regular chair for supper, first time in years. And that goes pretty well. And then in another couple months, I am walking with two walking sticks at the hospital, stunning my colleagues. and then with one walking stick, and then without any walking sticks. And then in May of that same year, so 2008, I tell my family I really want to try riding my bike. It's the first time in 6 years. We have an emergency family meeting. Jackie tells my son, who's 6'5", Zach, you run alongside on the left. And she tells my 13-year-old daughter, Zebby, you run alongside on the right. And she'll follow. And we get into position, I get on my bike, and I bike around the block. And now that big 16-year-old boy, he's crying. Zebby, my 13-year-old, she's crying. Jackie's crying. And if I relive that moment, tears can still come to my eyes, because when you have a progressive neurologic disorder, one of the things you learn to do is you let go of the future. Because the future is so grim, you just agree to take each day as it unfolded. So even though I was remarkably better, I was still just taking each day as it unfolded. I didn't know what it meant. But that day, I knew that the current understanding of secondary progressive multiple sclerosis was incomplete. And who knew how much recovery might be possible? So I kept biking a little bit more every day. And then in October, Jackie had signed me up for the Courage Ride 18.5 miles, and I finished it. I crossed that finish line. Once again, we're all crying, you know? And this fundamentally changes how I think about disease and health. It will change the way I practice medicine, and it will change the focus of the research that I do. And I've made it my mission to teach the public that yes, there's stuff that you can do, and to teach clinicians that yes, there are things that we can do to change the healing journey of our patients, and to do the research that will change the standard of care. So I am thrilled to be here chatting with you and your tribe that yes, despite whatever your physicians tell you, there is so much that you can do that will change your healing trajectory.
Thank you so much for saying that right here at the top, because I really view each of these interviews as a love letter to, you know, really who you and I used to be, struggling with our health, searching for answers. And the last thing that I want is for people to take that first or second opinion from a doctor that doesn't know any better. It means well, but doesn't know that they're limiting your future by, you know, making these big grand statements. So,
you know, and I think it's fine to see the conventional specialist who is going to talk with you about the FDA approved drugs, which may be very helpful to you, but they don't have training on lifestyle medicine. They don't have training on the impact of diet, on addressing sleep, on addressing toxin exposures, on all these resilience factors that we are building the research showing what a huge impact they have in the MS and neuroimmune space. And clinically, it's certainly these same interventions are very powerful in the inflammatory bowel disease space as well.
I totally agree. So I know that you wanted to cover with me today the four M's.
Yes.
Yeah, microglia, microenvironment, and micronutrients. What are these and why are they so crucial?
Okay, so the mitochondria are the little power plants of the cell. They're ancient bacteria that were engulfed, actually about 3 billion years ago by bigger bacteria and allow us to generate energy more efficiently for the cell. And that energy is what the cell uses to drive the chemistry of life, mitochondria. And then microglia. All of us, as we age, our brains have a little more inflammation that becomes a problem, and a little more degeneration that becomes a problem. So even if you don't have an autoimmune disease, the microglia are going to get stressed and not perform very well as part of aging. If you have an autoimmune disease, whether it's multiple sclerosis or a autoimmune disease involving your gut, you also have microglia that are not working very well in your brain, increasing the probability of symptoms that you can tell me, are these common in your population? Fatigue, anxiety, depression, brain fog. I see you nodding. So in my experience, those are very common problems for people with autoimmune disease involving their gut. And that means your microglia are activated and not doing very well. And then we have, so we want to calm the microglia. And this is about the microenvironment. We have billions of dollars being spent to try and find drugs that will fix up your microglia. It's going to be a waste. we'll find drugs that work really well in mice, work really well in rats. But when they try to use those drugs in people, because people, we get to eat what we want, we get to have fights with our family members, we get to ruin our sleep, exercise or not, smoke or not, live in an environment that has too much low air quality. And so we have all these environmental factors that will prevent the drugs that would have worked well in the mouse studies, they won't work very well for human studies. So this is where the microenvironment is so important. And remind me, I've covered three M's. Which M did I miss so far?
Micronutrients.
Okay. So for you to repair the myelin and to repair the gut for that matter, you have to have the building blocks. If we are plants, we can make do with, you know, minerals from the soil and oxygen from the air, and we can photosynthesize and make our structures. Because we're not, because we're animals, we have to eat our food. So we have to be able to eat our foods, digest it, and then assimilate it into our bloodstream and use those building blocks to make the stuff that we need. And then we need the cofactors, the vitamins, the minerals, to facilitate those chemical reactions. And we now know, and we didn't learn any of this stuff in medical school, anything about nutrition, sadly enough, nor did we learn anything about the microbiome, because we now know that we need the microbiome to help us digest our food and assimilate our food and make those proper nutrients. Because the microbiome's talking to our immune cells, and also, by the way, talking to my brain, in your brain.
Yeah, that's beautifully shared. Yes.
Yeah.
So how can somebody take this information, who's struggling with these chronic gut conditions, and take their life and their future into their own hands once more?
You know, one of the things that my veteran patients taught me at the VA is that it is work to begin to change our habits, our self-care routines, and that does take some effort. And biologically, we like to avoid effort. We tend to be sedentary. We conserve our energy. That served our species very well for millions of years. So if I'm going to do the work of creating new habits, I have to have a reason why. And so you might wonder, what is your reason for doing the work? Why would you put in the effort? And so a question that I like to ask is, if your home was beginning to have smoke rolling out of the windows, so you don't have flames shooting out, but we have smoke shooting out, is there someone or something that you love so much you would run in to save, even barefoot over broken glass, without thinking? And usually what I hear is my grandchildren, my children, it might be my spouse, it might be a parent, it might be the cat or the dog. It might be their life's work, some very precious family artifacts. If there's nothing, then I'm going to suggest to that person, let me send you to talk therapy, because I want you to find more meaning in your life. Mm-hmm. But if we can find something or someone that they care that deeply about, then my next question is, what if your health could improve a little bit? What would you like to be doing with that person or your dog or your cat that you can't do now? I don't ask for dramatic improvements. We just need a little improvement. Now I've got a reason to do the work.
Mm.
We have to find a reason to do the work. Because if we don't have a reason to do the work, we will avoid pain, discomfort, and we will seek pleasure. That's what your brain is wired to do, and that's what your patients will do, and that's what everyone who's listening here, you're going to do. If you have a reason to do the work, you know, we'll do extraordinarily difficult things for the people we love. I'll run into a burning building for the people I love. No question about that.
I love that you're sharing this, because what I say when people are still in the, you know, students and clients in our practice and things, when they're still in the bargaining phase of like, well, how much of this do I actually have to do? I say discipline is remembering what you want.
Yeah. You know, and I will acknowledge that we have to have self-determination. So I invite people, you know, pick your start date, pick the size of the intervention that you want to start with, because I want you to be successful. And if what you need is a small first step, that's fine. And for some folks, they're like, you know, food's too hard, but I could really work on exercise. Like, okay, start there. Sometimes it is food is too hard. Like, okay. Could you work on the adds instead of the subtractions? And so like, that's fine. Let's work in the adds. And what are the things that you're going to add to your diet? And here are the things that we suggest. And you can just begin step by step. And I acknowledge that if for you, a Mediterranean diet is what you can do as a family, great. That is way better than a standard American diet. Do that diet. That's perfectly fine. Now, if you want the diet that has the best research with the largest effect size, then that's the modified Paleolithic diet. And it's about twice as effective as the other diets. But if it's not what you and your family can do, but you could do the Mediterranean diet, do the Mediterranean diet. Do what you could be successful with. And then you're doing that, you're feeling better, and you're feeling like, you know, I wonder if I could feel even better yet. You can come back and be like, well, so we could work on the diet a little bit more, or we could add in sleep, we could add in stress management, we could add in toxin remediation. And so if you let the individual decide which domain, which lifestyle area they want to work at, and the size of the intervention, then they'll be successful. If I'm the one who says, you got to start with diet and you have to start with this particular diet, not they're going to fire me, or they should, because I've disrespected their autonomy.
I'm really glad you're making this point, because I think we often outsource our personal responsibility for our health to our practitioners. And we think that's actually the best path forward, but in truth, our practitioners must be our guides, and that's it. We still have to be the ones that are doing the work. So I love
you. You have to own your decision. And I invite people to think of this as being the principal investigator of the most important experiment that ever existed, which is their life. So you have a hypothesis, an idea, you're going to test with whatever little next step intervention you're going to take. And it will either be a resounding success, like, yeah, I really do feel better, or you know what, actually I feel worse, or it had no impact. And then you'll learn and you'll make your next intervention. And if you do that, you will continue to refine your self-care routine. And I predict over time, you'll keep getting a more precisely developed intervention plan for yourself and for your family.
Love that. So you said something that's really interesting, because I can just hear people in the audience going, okay, but Dr. Walls, I've done paleo. In fact, I've tried every protocol for my autoimmune gut condition. Mm-hmm. You know, I've tried every diet, every cleanse. What does modified paleo mean to you, and why has this been so successful?
Yeah, so I want to remind everyone, I'm diagnosed in 2000. I adopted the paleo diet in 2002, give up all grains, all legumes, all dairy. I continue to go downhill, add supplements starting in 2004. I have a very robust supplement regimen. And then in 2007, I'm like, what should I be stressing to get my nutrients from food as opposed to supplements? I still take a lot of supplements, and I still do. And then I structured my paleo diet. I also did food sensitivity testing, and I saw that I was sensitive to eggs. So I took out eggs. I structured my paleo diet. So we're stressing vegetables in the green leafy category. So kale, spinach, Swiss chard, other greens, other green herbs, in the sulfur rich category, cabbage, onion, mushroom family, and the deeply colored beets, carrots, berries. And then for, and I prefer that people eat meat, fish, poultry, but I recognize some people are spiritually opposed, uncomfortable. So you do have vegetarian, vegan options for those individuals. And that's basically my level one. When you're ready to go to the next level, I want you to add in liver once a week. It's fabulously good for you. Seaweed, nutritional yeast, algae, and fermented vegetables. And if you're going to have nuts and seeds, I'd like you to soak them and sprout them. And then we have ketogenic versions, and we have an elimination diet that takes out the legumes, even the gluten-free grains, and takes out nightshades. And I should make clear, even at the level one, I'm taking out gluten-containing grains, dairy, and eggs. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I see people get tripped up on is they get very fixated on certain foods, and their diet becomes smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
That they're actually still maintaining just their few ingredients are actually highly inflammatory in some regard.
And so people would say, and let me come back. When I was using this in my clinical practice, I was at the Iowa City VA. We had no functional medicine testing. So we used a lot of the elimination diet and then would reintroduce foods back in to get people to the least restrictive diet. If you've adapted the paleo diet, you're still doing poorly, you've adopted an elimination diet and you're still doing poorly, then what I do is we need to investigate further. So I do food sensitivity testing, I do toxin testing, and I may look for mold, I may look at other viral indicators, I'll look at hormone balance, because likely it's multifactorial. And I do have some people who have remarkable transformations reading my book. And every week we still are getting emails from people from all over the globe who've had their lives transformed by reading my book. But if you've adopted the paleo diet, you're still struggling. You might need to see a functional medicine trained practitioner who can investigate and really personalize the recommendations for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's beautifully said. So many gut conditions are multifactorial, and food is just one piece, although it is crucial, you know. I also want to give you a chance to talk to our colleagues today about this, because I know you've had a range of responses
as
this groundbreaking information, and I want to give you a chance to myth bust and speak to practitioners who are on the hunt to update their tools. Thank you.
Well, the first one is that patients are looking for people who are trained in lifestyle medicine. They want to have somebody who has expertise in nutrition, sleep, stress management, exercise. But behavior change is really hard. Behaviors don't change just by giving them information. It doesn't happen. Occasionally, it will. We know from the WHO, when a physician says, start this diet, whether it's a Mediterranean diet or American heart diet, diabetic diet, low fat diet, whatever diet the physician recommends, only 25% of patients will adopt it. That's not very many, or make any attempt. And then if you look at how many of those 25% are still doing that diet 2 years later, it's less than 10%. So that's 2.5%. Hmm. Information alone is not enough. There are a lot of strategies to help with that. We've created the Walls Behavior Change Model that teaches clinicians how we've been able to achieve 95% success rate. And I've only measured that at a year, so I don't know what I am at 2 years, but I'm sure it's much higher than 2.5%.
Right.
I'm sure it's much, much higher. And you know, it's similar statistics for exercise. less than 25%, even when their physician says we need to have you begin an exercise program, less than 25% will implement that. And at 2 years, less than 10% will still be sustaining that. So it's 2.5%. Information is not enough. It is certainly very helpful for the treating physician to say, please do these things. But then we need to support them. Health coaching can be helpful. And then, you know, the WALS behavior change process of helping people, you know, identify. And the first step is an inspiration. You have to have an inspiring story. In other cases, you have to have the ability to teach in metaphors so people can understand the possibility of why this intervention might work. And so we have, you know, basketball metaphors, coaching metaphors, teaching metaphors, mechanical metaphors, farming metaphors. So we have a bunch of metaphors that we talk about. So people can relate and like, okay, I think I can see how this might work. And then we get into more of the process of how to address facilitators and barriers. All the while recognizing people have to have autonomy. The person has to be willing, has to be able to choose like, yep, I'm ready to do this, or that's too much work. I can't do this right now because my spouse is going through cancer and I can't take another thing on. And so we acknowledge that it's hard. This might not be the right time, but it may be the right time. And so we'll go ahead and we'll work with you or invite you to come back when it is the right time.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. And you don't even know this, but I teach metaphor mapping work, and metaphors are fundamentally the easiest way to access the subconscious and open up a psychoactive experience. So I just love that you're incorporating that. I didn't know that you did that.
It's very, very helpful. People have to be able to see how this could be working. We have to be able to speak in ordinary language. It can't be, you know, MD technical speak. I have to, it's one of the things that Professor Bill Bean taught me in medical school when I was a youngster many, many years ago. At the end of every clinical encounter, you'd say, be sure to ask your patient, what did they learn and what they're going to do? And what I learned was, I gotta speak plainer, because people are like, doc, I have no idea what you just said. Like, okay. Okay, I gotta speak plainer. And then the other thing that I learned was, hell no, doc, I'm not doing that shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm so glad you told me. So let's negotiate what you think would be realistic. And sometimes I'd say, you know what, we just can't come to anything that's going to work. And I think I'm not the right physician for you. And so sometime I would tell them, like, we have to get you someone else. Yeah. But by asking people what they learn, what they're going to do, and inviting them, like, it's okay to tell me you can't do it. And then I began to say, it's okay to tell me you can't do this. Then people say, yeah, you're right, I can't. Like, okay, so, could we brainstorm? Is there something you could do? And that's when I learned, like, a small next step that they could achieve, walk out, they're enthusiastic, they would achieve that and actually do quite a bit more by the time they came back.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Small wins build a lot of momentum. I love that.
Yeah, you have to have them identify, can they do the next step or do you need something smaller? And say, yeah, I can do it. Or, well, no, I need something smaller, like a whole lot smaller. Like, okay, so let's brainstorm for a moment. And then they leave with a next step that they are enthusiastic about. Mm-hmm. And then if you have the resources to have somebody in your team check in with that person, and you could find out, like, would you like us to check in with you in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, a week? That goes a long way towards reinforcing success.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree. My practitioners know every session has to equal momentum.
That's, yeah, you know, and I should remind everyone, I wanted to go back to the WALS protocol, the WALS diet. If you have a gut issue, This is about soups and stews and bone broth. And you're not having 9 cups of raw vegetables by any means. You're not having any raw stuff. You're probably having meat, broths, and soups and stews. And eventually, you might be able to have some fruit. And eventually, you might be able to have some raw vegetables, or maybe never. Your gut will tell you. But it's really important. Gluten-free, dairy-free, probably egg-free will be very helpful. Your protein sources, soups and stews, and listen to your gut.
Absolutely. These are really good, practical, actionable tips for both the patient and the doctor. What else would you say for somebody who's like freshly motivated? Okay, Dr. Walls, I feel like I've tried a lot of things, but I'm going to tackle this. You know, I'm going to make space in my life. Where should they start, you know, according to the Walls protocol?
Well, actually, the very first thing is to figure out your why. Yeah, that is absolutely the very first task I want you to do is some deep work on, if my health could improve a little bit, what I'd like to be doing. And is there a person that you have in mind? One of the things that my veterans taught me, that is a very useful tool, is to think about the hero's journey. Because the hero is facing, you know, and society is facing, you know, terrible crises. They're losing the war. The hero is in the fight, but separates and goes off to learn something really important and comes back and joins the struggle. And success is never guaranteed. You know, it's going to be hard. You might fail, but you're going to try anyway. And so when I ask my patients, is there somebody in your life that you would like to be an example of the hero journey for them, that they can look at you and realize that, yeah, you're doing something really hard. There's no guarantee that you're going to be able to beat back your MS. You're going to beat back your inflammatory bowel disease, but you're clearly doing the work and you're not complaining. You're just doing the work. And like, I am so inspired by the fact that you are in there doing the work on your healing journey. My kids were quite young. They watched me go, you know, become profoundly disabled, watched me, you know, working out, profoundly disabled, getting more and more disabled, and then saw me doing electrical stimulation, sweating in pain and doing all that work. And, you know, they talk about how inspiring that was, that I was doing the work, even when I was, you know, getting worse. And my patients talk about the power of buying into, I have a hero's journey here. And yeah, I may or may not, I don't know how far I'll get on my recovery, but I'm going to do the work. I'm going to be the inspiration for my children and my grandchildren that I'm doing the work. So incredibly powerful. And then think about which of the lifestyle domains that you want to tackle first. And start tackling it at the pace that you can manage. Now, based on what I've seen is people have the highest return, if you're ready, to clean up your diet, get rid of the sugar, the processed foods, fast foods, eat meat, fish, cooked vegetables, soups and stews, no gluten, no dairy, no eggs. And that, in my experience, has the largest effect size. If that's what you're ready to do, you can set a start date and that's where you start. If that's not what you're ready to do, then, you know, have a conversation with your family about what are the next steps that you could manage.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great, great start. And everybody can, you know, I think relate to that. I love that you started with the why, and this, you were so eloquent about that piece. For everybody in the audience who, you know, we'll call them our summit junkies, who have been following you, listening to you, and drawing your story, and, you know, they feel like they're in process with those things that have been named. Are there any advanced tips that you would recommend for them at this time?
You know, I think it's super helpful to add another lifestyle domain. So right now I'm realizing that my hamstrings are too tight. So, you know, I've put my strength training on hold. I'm like, okay, I got to really work on all of my stretching and flexibility, do more of that. What I want you to do is to keep reevaluating your life, your strengths, your weaknesses, where your pains are, and then realize, okay, perhaps I have to adjust my self-care routine and spend more time in this area. So if for me right now, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not spending nearly as much time stretching because I would much rather do my aerobics and strength training. And so like, okay, I'm going to have to reprioritize. And practically I have to reprioritize sleep because I have so many ideas. And, you know, I love my ideas. I would be, you know, I'm happy to suddenly realize, oh shit, it's almost midnight. And I should have gone to bed at 9. And so I've had to do things like set alarms on my phone to get myself to pull away from an interesting project. You will find that you will benefit greatly from practically looking at, okay, what should I focus on now? And make adjustments to your self-care routine. It will be different for all of you. It might be sleep, it might be stress, it might be getting more into that parasympathetic state, it might be balance work, it might be working on strength training because you had too many steroids and we have to worry about your bone mass and your muscle mass, so we have to do more strength training. But when we look at all these modifiable lifestyle factors, diet, stress, sleep, connection, exercise, the mental, emotional, spiritual side, they're all important. It's not that we can ignore all of them or any of them, but how much time you're going to spend in your day focused on which of those domains next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautifully said. What a wonderful one. Where can people find your work and follow you?
Well, the first thing I want you to do is go follow me on Instagram, drterrywalls.com. So Dr. Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S. You see what I'm cooking, eating, doing. You get to see me in my garden, and you hear the various things that I'm up to on Facebook and Twitter, Terry Walls. Mm-hmm. And my webpage, terrywalls.com, go there, be sure to sign up for my email so you can get the various blogs and all the stuff that's going on there.
Wonderful. Well, you know, or actually you may not know this, that your journey is something that I do strength from many, many times along the way for me. So just know that your ripple effect is huge, much larger than you.
Yeah, you know, I want to tell everyone who's listening here that when I was going downhill, I'd expected never to recover. And I was taught that functions once lost never come back with progressive MS. And so whatever you've been told by your medical team in terms of how much recovery is possible or not, always remember that there are things that you can do. Ask yourself that question, am I doing all that I can? And fortunately, I asked myself that, and I said, well, yep, I could be doing more, and I kept at it.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would actually think about you when I couldn't raise my arms up to brush my teeth, because that went on for 5 years. And I was like, well, okay, but she's still working on this. So, you know, we'll figure this out eventually. And I still think about that often. When I brush my teeth, it's like, I can't believe I get to do this now. What a gift.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, I did all of that stuff. I mean, I was doing a lot not to get better. And I was doing all that electrical stimulation not to get better because I knew recovery wasn't possible. My hands were still working. It's like, God, you know, I can still feed myself, brush my own teeth, and I can wipe my own butt. And that's really, really valuable stuff. I didn't want to lose that.
Don't take that stuff for granted. It's amazing. So
yeah, as soon as you're thinking like, oh my God, you know,
excited about the little things.
I'm thrilled to to be able to take care of that aspect of my personal hygiene.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for sharing your passion and your joy and your body of work with us today. And we just so appreciate you.